Welcome to Caldwell University Conversations. I'm Colette Liddy, Director of News and Media Relations. With the explosion of the development of digital devices, screen time for children has become a concern and a constant push and pull for many parents who want to decide how much, if any time, their children should spend with digital media and technology. Our guest today, Dr. Stephanie Sitnik, is assistant professor in the School of Counseling and Psychology at Caldwell University, and she's a developmentalist. She joins us to provide her insight on healthy digital and media usage for children and teens. Thanks for being here.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
This is such a big topic, and you wear many hats. You're an educator, you're a developmentalist, you're a mom, so you're going to have some very good perspective on this, and I'm very excited about it. So the American Academy of Pediatrics has put out Children and Media Tips for Parents, and we're going to look at some of those, and you've looked at it. And let's start with the very youngest, media usage or putting children in front of media, say 18 months or younger. What did you see there?
So the recommendations that seem to be not changed from their earlier recommendations would be that for children 18 months and younger, the American Association of Pediatrics are recommending no digital media.
None whatsoever.
In terms of television and things like that. They do make an exception for things like Skype conversation with family members or video chats and things like that. But overall, kind of that very, very young group, they're recommending to stay away from.
Interesting. Okay, as we get a little bit older, say 18 to 24 months, what's happening there? What is the recommendation in that area?
So one of the things that's changed, because earlier this group said, you know, no television whatsoever or no media exposure, and I think recently, changing with the changing in technology as well, they've kind of recognized that that's not always feasible and not always as harmful as they originally thought. So they're starting to say that some exposure is okay, as long as it's limited and as long as it's monitored and sort of done in a thoughtful way. And again, with that group, 18 to 24 months, sort of saying again, video conversations are good and some television high quality exposure to digital media. So whether that be something like Sesame Street or something like an educational app or game like that is okay as long as it's in small quantities.
And you stress the importance of really watching with children and discussing it with them. Can you explain that to
yes.
us?
Sure. So as a mom, I have a 2- and a 7-year-old, and I know that to some extent, if I want to put food on the table, I need a little bit of time to kind of cook or something like that, you know. And I certainly recognize that that is a part of what parents often will use television for or digital media for. But ideally, especially with young children, we should be letting them consume it with a parent next to them so that it's not just a exercise and kind of go get lost in this television show or go get lost in this video game. But instead, you're talking with them about what they're seeing or what they're doing, or you're having conversations about it so that you're incorporating things like language or cognitive development, and they can see that it's a way that you can still interact with parents.
And if you don't watch with them, what are some of the dangers or some of the concerns?
Well, I think some of the concerns are, there's multiple, really. A large concern, I think, and part of the recommendations for limiting digital media for young children is not just what they're consuming, but what they're missing out on by consuming. Mm. So they're missing out on that language interaction. They're missing out on imaginative play. They're missing out on physical activity. Right, so all of those things are very necessary for kids' development. Play is the number one job of children. It should be what they are doing, right? Because it's how they learn, it's how they develop language, it's how they get physically stronger. And the concern is when they're engaging in sort of this sedentary activity of just sitting there, that they are not having the opportunity to do all of those things. So by sitting down with children and talking with them about what they're seeing, you're still getting a little bit of language, you're still getting a little bit of social interaction that way. So that's one area that is a concern. Another thing that's a concern as well is that very young children cannot distinguish fantasy from reality. And they do not recognize that what they see is not real. Whether that be on a video game, whether that be on an app or on a cartoon show, they have a lot of difficulty distinguishing between, you know, Elmo is real versus Elmo is just something that's made up for television. And we can tell them that and we can say that, but they're still not going to understand that. So it's important that we monitor and limit what they're consuming so that it's something that's not scary to them or confusing to them, or that they're that is sending messages that maybe we don't want them to get, or even sort of subtle messages that we don't even recognize. You know, is there aggression taking place between characters that they're viewing that maybe we don't even realize, right? Because a world where Elmo is real is not that scary of a world, right? That's kind of a happy place to live. I'd like to live there. But a world where, you know, we have people that are hitting each other or solving problems in negative ways is modeling for those young children that this is how I should solve problems too. So it's important that we kind of limit what they consume as well as talk about what they're seeing.
Now, you talk about limits, and you actually advise, and they say here, set limits and encourage playtime. How do you practically set limits? How does that play out, say, in your household?
Right. So I guess first the question is, what should the limits be? And the American Association of Pediatrics has a really great digital media use tool that you can use to sort of plan for each family member how much they should or shouldn't be consuming. And you can kind of go on and plan in terms of making sure they have enough physical activity, making sure they have time for their homework, things like that. So in terms of what the limit should be, you can kind of adapt it for each individual, which is really neat. They can, instead of where they used to say just a flat, this is the amount of time you should get and that's it. Now they've allowed for that kind of change. In my house, what that looks like is we give limits in terms of time, in terms of time that they can, my children can use media and things like that. And because oftentimes my children will sort of view me as the bad guy if I say, okay, you know, it's time to stop. One way that we actually avoid that problem is we'll set timers, you know, and whether that be through my phone, whether that be through, you know, just an old-fashioned egg timer, once the bell goes off, you're done. And in a way, at least for my older son who's seven, that has taught him kind of to budget as well, because he says, okay, I have a certain amount of time, and I can either watch a television show, I can play a video game, I have to pick. And there's an understanding that I, you know, he has to plan for that. And so when the timer goes off, he can be mad at the timer, but he's not mad at me because he knows the rules. Well, maybe he is, but he does not direct it that way.
Catching on.
And he's learned that once the timer goes off, that's what that means. My husband and I, as parents, it's very tempting for us to be on our phone all the time as well. So we have times of the day where there is, we also get limits, right? We are all, we can't say you can't do this and then we still do it too, right? So there are times of the day where it is time to be a family right now and not time to be on our phone. If we're eating a meal, we are all eating a meal. We're not, you know, some of us don't get to be on the phone and other people don't. So it's important for us to model that to them as well.
As adults start to use this more as a pacifier too, they need to look at what they're modeling to their children, correct?
Right. And I think it's hard sometimes. I mean, we both work, we're both busy, we're both professors, so we have a lot of students with questions that we want to attend to. But we have come to a point where we've said, and to our students as well, you know, from this time, we are not available. Now, maybe after they go to bed, we can go back to that. But we make it a point to have periods of the day where they're our main focus of attention.
Interesting. The New York Times had an article recently, and it was titled, Silicon Valley Nannies Are Phone Police for kids. And it talked about how parents want to keep their children away from screens and what we've been talking about. And I spent many years as a television producer, and I remember as we were into the new century, realizing myself sitting in an edit room all day long, how there were many more moving parts. There was this factoid, and this corner was moving, and this screen, and this special effect. So what do you think about that as we see more overstimulation on these screens? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Sure. Especially for young children, but I would say for older as well. Research actually shows that when it comes to kind of educational television shows, that the ones that seem to be the most effective have the least going on there. And we see that the children tend to do better in terms of actually being able to get information from it, from kind of less is more, right? And they tend to be less likely to be overstimulated from it and to be able to take away from it. And interestingly, Sesame Street for a while sort of went to this more stimulation model and realized it wasn't working, and they pulled back a little bit. And now you'll see kind of a more simplified version of what was there for a couple years for that very reason. But we see children easily getting overstimulated. There's a lot happening. So those shows that might be really boring to you as a parent are actually the ones that the children can learn the most from.
And we've talked about some of the negative effects, but we certainly know there are so many positive effects from the explosion of technology in our world today. Children with disabilities are learning, and it's been wonderfully positive. Would you agree?
Absolutely. In terms of children with special needs, there are increased ways for them to communicate using different technology devices. I was a special ed teacher for several years, and one of the things we used to use, because I'm old enough to say this, is we just had them have actual pictures where if children who didn't have verbal ability, all they had to carry around a book with different pictures in it and flip through the pictures if they wanted to communicate something to you. But now we have these great tablets where you have kind of a whole host of pictures available to you that can help the children communicate, which is really nice.
Yes.
So that, but even for kind of typical developing children, the internet, just like for adults, it's opened up literally the entire world, right? We have the ability to communicate with people we've never been able to before. We have access to information we've never had before. And that has really changed the game, right? It's a great thing,
right,
as long as we do it safely and smartly in terms of being able to recognize what's credible and what's not.
Right. And that leads me to another question, because you're a researcher, right? Mm-hmm. And you're always looking at what's authentic and what's true.
Right.
So with older children, as they start to get into their teenage years and they have more access and more freedom, there's this whole question of what's true, what's fake news, right?
Right.
And how do we teach them to discern that, what's actually authentic? How do we teach them?
Right, and that's such a challenge, I think, even for adults, right? It's something that as adults we struggle with as well. How do you know it's a credible source or not? But I think teaching children to be critical is really important, to question information that they get and say to themselves, you know, where is this coming from? Is this source a reliable source? Is there any reason for this source to try to bias me in some way, right? Is there motivation for them? And to sort of just always be asking themselves that, I think, is really important. And it's something that as adults we have to keep doing too, and it's easy to kind of forget, right? So I think that's important.
And another concern as they get into teenage years, well, even younger, is the permanency of what they post online, and we're talking about social media, and it's of course just going to keep expanding.
Right, and I don't even think it's just limited to social media. I think even just with devices and texting back and forth to friends and things like that, sending pictures back and forth, I think that in the moment it can be hard to remember that this can potentially stick around forever, right? And it's always easy to access. So I think that it's important to teach adolescents the permanency of what you post online, whether it's a picture, whether it's a comment, whether it's, you know, no matter what it is, we can always trace it back to you. And even apps like Snapchat that are very temporary, all it takes is a screenshot and it's no longer temporary, right? Like we can save those pictures forever. So I think a good way to teach that is taking teenagers aside and saying, hey, you know, is this something we could show grandma? Is a question you should always ask yourself.
Oh, very good.
Or if you were to go on a job interview and your potential employer pulled up this history, which they do, they search for your name and see what you've done, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, how are you going to feel about that? And what do you think that's going to do in terms of you being able to get the job? And just having them constantly question that, just take that pause button before they post or before they hit, you know, enter, and to make it permanent is important. Yeah.
Very good. Well, this has been some wonderful advice. We could keep talking forever, so I want to thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Our guest has been Dr. Stephanie Sitnick from Caldwell University's School of Psychology and Counseling. And thanks to our students, Drew Timothy and Suni Gupta, for their production assistance. I'm Colette Liddy. Please join us next time for Caldwell University.